Okay, well, if you're the appellant, step to the microphone, and then we can...
If Your Honors were
ready. Go ahead, please.
Apologize. Good morning, Your Honors. Jeffrey C. on behalf of the appellant Dongbu Insurance Company, which I'll refer to as Dongbu shorthandedly. This case involves a general question of insurance coverage and insurance coverage law under a standard commercial general liability insurance policy, of which the operative coverage form is a standardized commercial general liability coverage form. And it was issued by Dongbu to the appellee, the Association of Apartment Owners of the Moorings, Inc., and I'll refer to the association as the association.
I have a predicate question.
Yes.
It's based on my curiosity as somebody who used to do insurance coverage cases and probably not covered by the record. There was an arbitration here.
Yes.
Did the insurance company provide counsel for the Homeowners Association in that arbitration?
It did not.
It did not. So the claim wasn't made until the arbitration concluded.
Came down, right.
Well, let me ask you this. It did not. Was it asked?
Not at the time. Not timely.
I see. Okay.
So it was request that the arbitration award came out. The request was made to indemnify the association for the damages.
So the first time the insurance company hears about this is, here's the arbitration award that includes attorney's fees.
Okay, that's because in the normal course of events, one would expect that when there was a claim against the property owners association, they would tender it to their insurer to defend, and the insurer would defend the arbitration.
Right.
That didn't occur here.
Right.
But you didn't deny coverage because of that.
That's correct.
Okay, I was trying to figure out how insurance defense counsel let this get to let the attorney's fees get so high in this case.
If this had been presented to you at the time of the arbitration with a request to defend, would you have defended?
It's a little bit speculative, but to answer you directly, I think the fairest I can answer that is it's very possible there may have been a defense under reservation of rights. And the reason why I say that is there were two type of basic claims made in the arbitration against the association. One was a breach of contract claim based on the governing documents of the association to the unit owners who were claiming against them. The other type of claims were characterized by the arbitrator as tort-based type claims, including a negligent infliction of emotional distress type claim and some other tort-type claims. So,
but the underlying claim seemed to me, property damage. There was a leak.
Well, that's true. I mean, in terms of the facts, that's true.
And you cover property damage, so you would have had to defend as to that, I think.
Well, see, but it was in the context of the cause of action that they were primarily suing on with respect to those kinds of physical damage to their unit was a breach of contract claim, and generally breach of contract or contract-related tort claims
but
are not covered.
We're taking you down a side path here. You don't dispute, and I take it covered the property damage portion of this arbitration award. Okay.
That's right. So
the reason I'm going down this path for just a moment is that if you had been asked to defend and had you defended, you would have paid a lawyer to do so, and you would have been obligated under the contract to do so.
That's right.
So as a practical matter, what we may be fighting about here is that this lawyer got paid more than you would have paid the lawyer you would have employed.
But to be very clear, the attorney's fees we're talking about here as to whether there's coverage under the policy are not the defense fees and costs incurred by the association.
Oh, I'm sorry. I flipped it.
The attorney's fees of the claimants. And so that's the difference.
No, I'm sorry. I flipped it. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Right. So that's the difference.
So I think we all agree this is a matter of reading the policy language.
Right.
And so tell me why you think the policy language excludes attorney's fees. When I look at the language, it's this because of any obligations that somebody incurs because of property damage, not just any property damage obligations, but obligations because of. Why isn't that broad enough to include fees?
Because our position is simply this. The operative portion of the policy that we're all looking at is the insuring agreement of this standard form CGL coverage form. And the insuring agreement, the phrase that Your Honor just mentioned, in essence, sort of cherry picks the breadth of the entirety of the relevant portions of the insuring agreement, because the insuring agreement reads as follows. We will pay those sums that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay as damages because of, quote, bodily injury. So that's a defined term.
Which is not included in this case.
Not involved here. Or, quote, unquote, property damage. That's a defined term in the policy to which this insurance applies. And then there's another portion of the insuring agreement in the section.
That's why I asked the question. You did come. This insurance does apply to property damage. To the property damage that was incurred in this case.
Generally speaking, that's true. But the phrase I wanted to alert your honors to, which does very much apply to the insuring agreement, is caused by an occurrence. So you have to read that in its entirety, as opposed to cherry-picking out the term damages, for example, or damages because of. It all goes together, and you have to read that in context.
I'll just read the sentence that you read to us. I mean, it's the critical sentence. We will pay those sums that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay as damages because of property damage. Now, because of property damage, it's clear that the attorney's fees are here because of the property damage. The question is whether they qualify as damages because of the property damage.
Well, actually, we dispute that they were awarded because of the property damage.
In your view, they were awarded because of what?
Because of the breach of contract. The association lost on the breach of contract claim, and the arbitrator very specifically in the award relating to the award of the claimant's attorney's fees against the association prefaced the sentence by, as the prevailing parties, the award of attorney's fees are granted. That phraseology, if you will, that phrase, to me, keys in the application, even though the arbitrator wasn't as specific, of the Hawaii Revised Statutes 607-14, which is our assumpsit statute that allows a prevailing party to recover attorney's fees against the losing party, if you will. And that's what was the context and the legal basis of the award of attorney's fees.
So you're not contesting, then, that the word damages can include attorney's fees?
We are contesting that much.
So you're contesting it on two levels then. Number one, it's not because of, and number two, even if it were because of, this is not attorney's fees aren't damages.
If I can lead you kind of the chronology of the logic, if you will, is this. Number one, that the award of attorney's fees, as specifically awarded here to the prevailing party, does not constitute damages. That the award of attorney's fees, so the attorney's fees itself do not constitute either bodily injury or property damage as those terms are specifically defined in the policy. And moreover, even if you were to allow that attorney's fees might be damages because of property damage, it's not damages because of property damage to which the insurance applies as caused by an occurrence. And that's because, if I can jump to that point, that's because, as I mentioned, the arbitrator very specifically awarded the claimants damages based on their breach of contract.
Tell me, I'm looking at the arbitrator's award.
Yes.
Tell me where I can find that he very specifically did it on the basis of the breach of contract.
If I may go retrieve my...
Sure. Because all I see is, and I'm looking at... the MOOR excerpts of record 189, and the arbitrator, and I'm on to 190. The arbitrator says claimants are determined to be the prevailing parties and awarded. It doesn't say I'm basing it on a breach of contract.
Well, but when you read the arbitration award as a whole, he rejected their tort-based claims, so he denied the tort-based claims. And he ruled that he was awarding the in the body of his arbitration decision, indicated that he was ruling in favor of the claimants based on their breach of contract claims, being the governing.
But then why do you cover them? If the arbitrator awarded damages based only on the breach of contract claims, it would seem nothing's covered.
Well, I would argue that probably is true.
But given the fact that you paid the judgment, which could only be covered by the insurance policy if the $8,000 judgment was because of property damage, how can we then conclude that the attorney's fees were not because of property damage?
Because two ways to look at it. Even if you assume attorney's fees constitute damages.
Right, and I understand your argument on that. Let's assume that they can constitute damages.
Right, so we're saying that first of all, we're saying that they're not, because if they were really awarded essentially as a taxation of fees.
No, wait, I understand. You're not waiving that argument. I understand that your view is attorney's fees are never damages, but you have a different argument here. Yeah. These are not caused because of property damage. They're because of breach of contract.
Well, property damage caused by an occurrence.
Okay.
So
they're because of breach of contract is what you're saying.
That's right.
Then you wouldn't have to – if – everything that the arbitrator says that you're now relying on also goes to his basic award of damages, doesn't it?
Well, if I can put it this way, I would concede that is a strong argument that perhaps if the insurance company had followed certain advice, probably shouldn't have needed to pay for
it. Well, but I guess the question is there something of an estoppel here? You're paying these $8,000 because they're covered by the policy. But you're saying, oh, the attorney's fees are not covered because they didn't arise out of property damage, even though we've paid for the property damage.
And I don't think so, because from the writings that I'm aware of, the insurance company in relating to the association as to what they were going to or what they were not going to pay had adequately reserved rights under the policy. So I don't believe the estoppel argument would come into play, because the insurance company did reserve rights specifically with respect to the attorney's fees and the non-coverage for the attorney's fees.
No, if this were a pure question of whether or not under the policy your company would be obliged to pay for the repair from the water damage and the repair to the roof on the lanai, and I read this and I said we will pay for property damage, I would rule against you. I mean, this seems to me clearly covered by the policy, or at the best I can say for you, if not clearly covered by the policy, the ambiguity is so slight that I would interpret the policy against your argument.
Well, if...
Which is to say, I think you were absolutely obliged to pay the $8,000.
If the claimants had sued with a tort claim against the association, so let's say, and see, factually, this does not bear out. The association was not the one who did the repairs, in the sense of they were not the contractors who physically did the repairs. I believe that's why the claimants brought those particular breach of contract claims against the association, because they argued the association had a contractual duty to make whatever, do maintenance, repairs, et cetera. And so I would disagree respectfully that the quote-unquote property damage arose out of a covered claim, because they rose out of a non-covered claim, being the breach of contract claim. Your Honors, I wanted to reserve at least a couple of minutes for possible rebuttal.
Okay.
And I apologize, but if you have other questions at this point, I'd be happy to try and answer.
Well, why don't we hear from the other side, and we'll make sure you have a chance to respond.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Alan Van Etten, representing Plaintiff Appellee Association of Apartment Owners of the Moorings, which I will refer to as plaintiff because that's the way they're referred to in the briefings. From what I've heard, I agree with the Court. That is, there are these five, there's one sentence, we will pay those sums that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay. Now, that's not an issue. There are sums and they're legally obligated to pay. And there's as damages, that's that issue. And then because of property damage to which this insurance applies, And I respectfully submit that they paid these property damage, but it's not just that they paid the property damage. It's all the things that we put in our briefing, which is in our concise statement of facts, we stated that they paid it, and the wording for that is that they acknowledged coverage, sent an email to counsel acknowledging coverage.
Well, I'm looking at the email. It's at your excerpts 1146.
Yes.
And it looks like the classic email one gets from an insurance defense counsel, which says, look, we're not going to fight about these two things, even though we think we shouldn't have to pay them. We'll pay them out of the goodness of our heart. But as to the third, we won't pay it. I'm not sure that's a waiver of any kind, is it? I mean, they're not saying, you're clearly covered for these two things, don't worry about it. They say, after carefully reviewing it, we'll reimburse and pay it. And they go on to explain why they won't pay the attorney's fees. Maybe an inconsistent position, but it's not. They're not saying this is covered, are they?
They're not. The actual email says it's a coverage decision. That's in the. I was able to speak with Dong Bu.
Right. So with respect to
coverage decision. Sorry.
With respect to the special damages, attorney's fees, and costs. We'll pay the special damages and the costs, but we won't pay the attorney's fees. That's what they said.
That's what they said was their coverage decision, yes.
That was their coverage decision. Now, so you're saying that must mean that the first ones were, that everything is covered? Because
well,
that
were, I have more.
Okay, go on.
That was the first thing that they said. And then we put that in our motion for summary judgment. And in our concise statement of facts, we characterized it as acknowledging coverage for the special damages and costs awarded in the underlying arbitration. They did not contradict that, as they are required to under the rules regarding concise statements of fact, so that the court doesn't have to concern itself with facts that are not
right,
in
but,
dispute.
But we're still stuck with, at least I want to hear you address, I don't know that we're stuck with it, your colleague's argument that we covered those because those arose out of property damage. But given the arbitrator's award, it's clear that the attorney's fees arose out of breach of contract, and that's why we didn't cover them. So could you respond to that?
Well, yes. Because they covered them, and we, our position, it wasn't just in this concise statement. We said it in our memorandum and support. We said it in our reply, and then at oral argument cross motions for summary judgment, the judge specifically said, but here you're dealing with the covered damages, right? And the answer was, yes, that's right, and we paid them. So that's why it's not just the email.
No, maybe we're missing each other. I'm not sure it's a winning argument. I just want to hear what your response is to your colleague's argument. He says, look, maybe those were covered. Maybe the special damages were covered.
Okay.
But when we go back and parse the arbitrator's award, the attorney's fees were awarded because of breach of contract, not because of property damage. That's his argument. And so I want to hear your response to that.
Okay. The question is whether property damage to which this insurance applies, and then they're taking that to, the insurance only applies to property damage caused by an occurrence, and there's no finding that there was an occurrence. And I mean, I guess that's what he's saying. There's no finding that there was an occurrence.
I think what he's saying, and he makes the argument better than I, but let me try to reconstruct it, is that you made, the arbitrator ruled for you on your contract claim, or for the plaintiff on his contract claim, but against the plaintiff on his tort claim.
Oh, I have a few things to say about that, yes.
Yes, I'd like to, and so, and therefore, the fee award must have been a contract-based fee award, not a tort-based fee award.
So he then, it sounds like he then, and they throw this out, the Burlington case decided by this court in 2004, which held that in a construction contract, if they nailed the, if they constructed the building defectively, that was not covered because the duty to construct the building was contractual. That's what he's saying. So therefore, if it's a breach of contract claim, it's not covered. Now, if that's what they had said, even in their memorandum in opposition to us or in their motion for summary judgment, we would have dealt with that. That would have been an entirely different case.
So I understand you're arguing waiver, and it may well have been waived.
I mean, it's not fair to us.
Fair enough. But I also want to know, let's assume that we were to take up this issue. What's your response to your colleague's argument?
Well, first of all,
other than that it was waived.
No. Yes. First of all, he said that you can tell it refers to 60714, which is the Hawaii Revised Statutes on assumpted claims. But as we state, we didn't really think they would make a big deal of this. We stated in a footnote, but it is in there, in our memorandum, in our answering brief. 60714 applies to contract claims, but only up to 25% of the amount awarded. So if it was awarded pursuant to 60714, it would have been 1,500, a quarter of the 6,000, what they're characterizing as contract claims. So as we state, no, this was actually a fee award under our condominium statutes, which actually provide for the duty to maintain and repair the common elements, and provide that if the association doesn't, it can be sued. An action can be brought, and if it's the association's duty, which it clearly found, the association must pay. So if they had made this argument in their summary judgment motion, I'm just giving you one way that I've thought of as I was thinking that we would have dealt with it. We would have distinguished Burlington. The reason this is a contract claim is in condominium law in Hawaii, you have this statute. And the statute says, besides the duty that it gives pursuant to the statute, which I just related, it also says you have to have declarations and bylaws which lay all this out. And so the plaintiff's attorneys often bring it as a breach of the bylaws rather than by the statute. The record wasn't clear to me what they did or why they did it, because it wasn't relevant to me, because Dongbu said, we're covering this. Now, why they covered it, counsel says, well, maybe it was they didn't take my advice. I mean, that's what I read into what he said. I'm not saying that was what it was, but it sounded like that to me. But that changes everything. It changes everything. If they had said, no, this is a contract, would have said, no, this is a condo statute.
I think I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure I've got it right. The amount of the award of damages for property damage looks to me as though, there are two pieces. Number one, the arbitrator's award says, fix the roof, and then the arbitrator's award, and pay this amount. It looks to me as though the pay this amount is for damage to the owner, to the owner's property, rather than damage to pay the repair. Is that correct?
That's what it looks like to me, too.
Yeah, right. So the monetary award in the arbitrator's award is not to fix the roof. It's rather to repair the property that was damaged because of the leak.
And that's specifically what the underlying court found based on all those representations.
And that's how I read the arbitrator's award.
Right.
Well, I don't see anything in the policy that tells me that something either is or is not property damage, depending upon the source of the obligation to pay for the property damage. It's property damage, whether it's resulting from a contractual obligation not to protect the property, whether it's resulting from a statute, whether it's resulting from a tort obligation to refrain from damaging the property. No, we have property damage, and there's a legal obligation to have refrained from damaging the property. I see nothing in the policy that tells me that the source of the obligation to pay the damage changes the obligation of the insurer. Now, that's probably an argument addressed to you that you may wish to address in rebuttal. Yeah, it may well come out of a contractual obligation, but the result is property damage. And I don't see anything in the policy, unless I'm going to be informed otherwise, that tells me that isn't property damage within the meaning of the policy.
Well, I agree with you completely, Your Honor, but I'm one of those who would have, if they had taken a different position, would have, in the alternative, said perhaps we should reconsider or we should distinguish Burlington, because Burlington really focused on a duty that was only in a contract.
Right. Now, that's my question. Can you have insurance coverage for a breach of contract?
You can have insurance coverage for damage, property damage caused by an occurrence.
No, I'm talking about, in other words, does that cover a breach of contract? Seems to me you can have insurance coverage. I'm gonna, you know, don't know much about insurance law, but it seems odd to have insurance coverage for breach of contract.
Well, actually,
because presumably breach of contract is volitional, and I know many states, you know, you can't cover intentional torts anyway.
Oh, right, and Hawaii is one of those. You can't cover intentional torts.
Aren't most breaches of contract intentional? No. In other words, you know, Homer says, you know, my patio has been busted up by this bad roof, caused, you know, rainwater to go there, and you have the duty under the condominium association documents to repair my patio because it was caused by the leaky roof, right? So, you know, if you make that kind of a contractual claim, you think it's covered by insurance?
I think the insurance policy doesn't distinguish between contractual and tort claims.
Well, they're not. The contractual claims are not covered under the insurance policy.
That's what Burlington holds. A lot of other courts hold differently or distinguish it, and that's what I would argue if they had made all these claims.
Well, I'm not sure it was made in as articulate a fashion as this morning, but I'm reading it. Transcript of the argument before the district court, and Mr. Shah does say there, you know, sometimes fees result from property damage and sometimes they result from contract damages, and that's the distinction in this case. We don't have in the supplemental, in the excerpts of record, the briefing on this, but he does seem to at least touched on it below. I'm wondering about your waiver argument.
We do cite to it in our memorandum. I didn't look to see.
Isn't this what the whole dispute about the Burlington case is about? And whether Arizona law is the same as Hawaii law? Doesn't it fairly implicate this issue?
Not Burlington, no. Because if they thought Burlington had applied, they would have said, we are going to deny this claim because it arises out of a contract. Then we would have had the opportunity to address that. Totally different case. For their own purposes, they decided to say that this was a covered claim, and they made that representation to the lower court.
Let me ask you a question about your position. I think I know what your answer is, but I want to be sure. Let's assume that the arbitrator said, this is a covered claim. There's property damage here. I'm paying $8,000, $14,000, whatever. But all the fees that were incurred, not many, much, a large portion of the fees that were incurred in this case were incurred to try to prove a breach of contract, which I don't find. So flip the facts around. Would the fees then be covered?
If he said that it's a breach of contract, no, because, well, first of all, under the condominium statute, they're awarded their fees. It doesn't say anything about contract. I mean, it gives a duty on the association, and it says you shall maintain and repair. And if you don't and you're sued for it, you're going to have to pay attorney's fees. It doesn't say anything about contract or tort, although the statute makes it into a tort because it gives a duty. It's for the protection of the association. So I'm concerned that I might not have answered your question.
I guess, and I must admit that I'm lost in the intricacies of Hawaii condominium law. I take it that your answer is it really doesn't matter how the arbitrator characterized the award, because the award was made because of property damage.
Right, and it's crucial here that the insured insurance company said it was a covered claim.
I understand that argument. I'm just
okay. Because we're saying as damages because of property damage to which this insurance applies. They answered that. They said it was property damage to which the insurance applies. They're now trying to say it wasn't property damages to which insurance applies. But they didn't tell that to the court below, and they didn't tell that to us.
Okay. And you're over time, and unless someone else from the bench has further questions, if you'd like to give us a quick little summary, we're
okay. And then as damages, I would just like to say we fully briefed if damages has two different explanations, and they gave one definition, we gave another in our answering brief. Hawaii is clear that if it could go either way, it goes for coverage. And we have cases where if they had read the policy, if they had changed, for example, this allows costs, if they had said costs exclusive of attorney's fees.
No, we get that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you. You've saved some time.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I want to address two points that came up in the arguments by my colleague. First of all, on the question of estoppel waiver, that issue, I wanted to direct the court that in terms of the order granting summary judgment and ultimately the judgment that we've appealed from, waiver, either waiver or estoppel was not a basis for the ruling. My memory, and I'm just, I would say that I'm going by memory. My memory is that during the oral arguments, waiver and estoppel, I don't believe were addressed, but even if they were, as I point out, the district judge did not rely in terms of ordering and ruling against us based on waiver or estoppel, and I don't believe those apply. The second point I want to quickly bring up is in partially in answer to the point you were making, Judge Fletcher, and it has been mentioned about the Burlington case. So I understand the temptation, and I'll describe it that way, to say, well, if there was some property damage, and because the insuring agreement refers to coverage for property damage, it would be covered. The governor, if I could describe it that way, almost like a governor to a vehicle or a motorcycle, is the term caused, or the phrase caused by an occurrence.
Right.
And that's where the Burlington case comes in, because...
And how is occurrence defined in this policy?
The standard definition. So basically it's defined as an accident, quite simply. And in the Burlington case, it was a construction defect case, so there were a combination of contract, breach of contract type claims, as well as contract-based tort claims, such as negligent misrepresentation, et cetera, as it related to the construction contract. And I wanted to point out, because this court specifically noted that in the claims asserted by the plaintiff in Burlington against these contractors, besides alleging generally breach of the construction contract, there were allegations specifically that Oceanic, the primary contractor, improperly designed or constructed the foundation of the residence, which caused earth movement and resulted in physical and structural damage to both the residence and the retaining walls. So minimally, there was at least allegations. I don't know what kind of evidence ultimately came out for that summary judgment, but there were specific allegations of quote-unquote property damage. Nevertheless, given the nature of the claims that were being asserted, and because of the importance of this definition of occurrence, which serves as kind of a governor, if you will, to the rest of the insuring agreement, this court ultimately ruled that those claims were not covered because they did not constitute an occurrence under the policy, even though there were allegations of property damage. Right. So that was the point I wanted to make. Right. So unless the court has any other questions, I wanted to thank the panel very much for allowing this chance to argue.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think both sides were very helpful arguments. Association of Apartment Owners of the Moorings, Inc. versus Dongbu Insurance, submitted for decision.